We're just trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
Alrighty, so here's another section, another segment that we need to have some sort of bumper for. And that'd be This Week in SCOTUS.
Oh, God.
So there were a couple things that made me want to bring this up. This is it's one of the areas of our three-branch system that doesn't really get enough headlines because, you know, they're not always in session. They're not always doing big things. And, you know, they've been in the news a lot lately because of Antonin Scalia's death and, of course, all the things that they've done with gay marriage and all the controversial things that they're doing.
Unless they're deciding a big case, you can't ignore them.
The things that aren't controversial, though, they still happen all the time, and we don't hear about them. So I wanted to at least, you know, touch on what did they do this week that's going to affect all of us. I couldn't remember. I couldn't find what that was that really made me think about it. But one thing in particular that got my attention this week was that Texas Republicans are talking very heavily about seceding from the United States again.
Every election cycle.
Yeah, so now this article was out on Occupy Democrats, but, you know, it's covering the real story. Obviously, this is certainly leaning one way in particular, but we'll try to get past that and just report the facts as they may be. Even though it's stupid. I mean, really, it's stupid.
Incredibly stupid.
It's stupid on so many levels. One, let's see. If they did manage to secede, what would happen?
Well, they'd lose, for one, they'd lose the $9,000 per head of federal funding that they get. That gets spent on the taxpayers.
Yeah, because they're not taking care of themselves very well. They're running in a constant debt. They don't have enough power generation facilities within the state to cover all of their needs. That's one. They import power from neighboring states. They do not have enough arable land to grow all the food that the people need because it's an awful lot of desert out there.
And they're especially also coming out of a drought, finally.
And because of that drought, what's just happened in Houston? An enormous flood.
Yeah.
I mean, they get tornadoes. They get earthquakes. They get hurricanes. They get floods.
And all of the disaster relief that they get for those events comes from the federal government.
Yeah.
They don't have their own disaster relief programs.
They cry and cry and cry about things and about how the government's not doing right and they shouldn't do this and shouldn't do that. And then all of a sudden they cry for federal aid.
Mm-hmm.
Time and time again. So yeah, the federal aid that's needed, you know, as Mike was saying, ends up being about $9,000 per person. That's a lot, and that's coming out of the pockets, out of the coffers of the other states that are prosperous that can, you know, take care of themselves and then some.
Yeah.
So if they did, they would then have to shoulder all that burden on their own.
Which they can't afford.
Which they can't do because they don't know how to budget, you know, properly in the first place. They have not proven themselves as a government, not as a people, okay? As the government body, the legislating body of Texas. They have not proven themselves good stewards of that state.
Now, it is interesting to note that it is, of course, a extremely red state. And the people in power who the secessionists are expecting to support them, their elected Republican officials, they really don't want this. They really don't want to be identified with these people at all. But all the secessionists are shouting loud and proud that they're American Republicans and that they're patriots.
Yes, because they don't quite understand what words mean.
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. So this – it does go to show, though, that even though the governing body is using, you know, the sticks to press the voting buttons and things like that, and, you know, doing all sorts of shenanigans on their own, they know which side their bread is buttered on. And by removing themselves from, yes, yeehaw in the chat room, by removing themselves from the greater mass of the United States, they would then have to do all these things that we do for them. And they can't do that. It would make their job way harder than just crying to the Fed saying, help, 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 send the National Guard.
Well, again, the big thing is also you have to remember is if they immediately secede, okay, every single military base and military person gets pulled out of the state. They
yeah,
no longer have
drop.
A military. And if I remember correctly, by actual federal law, they are immediately considered at least a non-power or possibly a hostile power on the border until negotiations are actually done.
Are
probably
if
hostile.
Memory serves. Our default stance towards a power we do not have diplomatic relations with that is on our border is hostility. It hasn't been relevant for
since
you know,
Mexico.
Ever,
yeah.
But well, I'm pretty sure that it's still on the books and it's never been changed because it's never had to be.
Since the late 1800s.
Yeah.
Right, middle to late 1800s.
Long,
but I'm pretty
long
sure
ago.
What's on the books is hostility.
So the reason this is sitting squarely in the SCOTUS area here is this line here. While the Supreme Court expressly forbids states from seceding following the end of the Civil War, we should be chastising the Texas for wasting their time on nonsense like this instead of addressing issues like the fact that their state is the worst for children in the country. In the past year, the state of Texas worked hard to shutter every single Planned Parenthood in the state. Even though one in four Texas children already live in poverty. Yeah, they're just not very good at doing things for the government. You know, it's...
They're not good at being people.
They're not
well,
good.
It comes out of the whole
I think
thing
we'll
of,
stop right there.
In almost all these states you see that are very much hardcore red Republican, mm-hmm. hardcore conservative, you look at their actual economic policies and what they do, and you're just watching them grind their state into practical non-existence economically, whereas you look at much more liberal states,
mm-hmm.
And you see them prospering.
They have as close to a self-sustaining economy as you can get for an area that small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that have come out recently, I know I saw a number of articles this week, was on Governor Brownback of Kansas. And the Republican base in his state trying to pull themselves away from him and his economic policies, which have essentially bankrupted the state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in order for him to keep Kansas even somewhat afloat, they're going to have to cut programs even further. And at this point, they're getting close to having to cut things that are vital to existence.
Now, there's something about Texas that is unique. Well, one thing in particular about Texas that is unique to the other states in the union. And I'll have to dig it up. But as I was looking at this, the last time they threatened to secede, The state constitution and the treaty that they signed when they came back into the fold after the Civil War states that though they cannot secede from the Union, they can divide themselves up.
Yeah.
So there is a potential, and they don't want this either, there is a potential that they could become four states.
I'm okay with that.
Well, the reason
that would hurt
considering
that.
Austin.
Well, yeah, the reason they don't want that is because if those four states came into existence, the breakup, and while Michael is right that they are a heavily leaning Republican red state, they have pockets of Democratic areas that two of those states would end up being huge Democratic windfalls.
Yeah, would end up being blue. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it ends up going from what is potentially a very large windfall of delegates for the Republicans becomes, you know, now your Republican area is going to be much smaller because it's going to be those wide open spaces where there's next to nobody but Republicans who live in, you know, 4 miles to your next neighbor versus, like you said, in Austin, which is a densely populated, packed area. So your delegate breakup's going to be different. You know, it would hurt, you know, Republican politics for Texas to break up like that.
Yep.
And we have another related thing to go with this.
What's that?
Also recently, thank you, Rachel Maddow, for this one. We had an interview with Kasich recently, and a question that was brought up was, well, why doesn't D.C., Washington, D.C., get voting representation? And Kasich did not hold the party line. He said, in all honesty, I'm actually giving the quote, it's because it would be Democratic votes.
Yep.
Just bam, right there, huh?
They're not even hiding it anymore. For any number of myriad of reasons, it was just he let the honesty slide and said, because it would be Democratic votes.
Isn't this an amazing election cycle? We're getting the wool pulled off of so many things.
There was an article that I saw it earlier in the week, and I was on my phone at the time, and I didn't manage to save it, and I couldn't find it again because I would have loved to have put it in the show notes. It was not Bed Peace, but it was from someone like you, Stephen, someone who was heavy into poli-sci, who they submitted. It was like in the Wall Street Journal or something, saying about it doesn't matter who wins this election. The face of American politics is forever changed because we have moved enough into this internet culture where nothing is hidden and everything circulates basically as soon as it hits any medium by which news can travel, that, you know, we're learning so much about how our elections don't work the way they think they do. We're learning so much about just how corrupt American politics is, that even if the establishment manages to maintain technical authority, the fact that the people now know all the bullshit is going to ruin every future election cycle. Yep. Because the people know now. We're aware in more numbers than we have been for decades.
And we have this wonderful thing called a meme. And, you know, there's a lot of people that say, hey, wait, I remember that. That happened like 2 years ago, or that happened 4 years ago, or that happened during the Obama run, you know, and we're seeing all those things come right back up. It's like, oh, you're lying? Oh, no, 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 no. This is the internet. The internet never forgets.
The internet never forgets.
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
When and where you said it.
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
And it's really working against Hillary in this cycle.
Well, it's working against a lot of people.
The only person that seems immune to all facts is Trump.
A little side bit to this. While the internet never forgets, and while a lot of people are aware, there's one caveat to actually make change happen.
Only one?
People have to do something.
Yeah.
That was another thing that this article mentioned. People are. We are seeing increasing numbers of voters, especially in younger demographics than we ever have before. We're seeing so many voters, in fact, that these active voter suppression tactics that have been done in the past and have gone unnoticed are being noticed now for the sheer volume of people who have been disenfranchised.
Yeah, well, hundreds of thousands of people. Yeah.
Especially the New York situation.
We'll cover that here in a minute. But going back to the article we have here, I was actually just looking up the movement about breaking up Texas into multiple states.
Yeah.
It's called Texas Divisionism. And the actual Constitution actually forbids states from breaking themselves up because only Congress can recognize the states. Yet when Texas was admitted to the Union, part of its actual resolution, which was voted on by more than two-thirds of Congress and approved, said that they have the right themselves to break themselves up.
Oh.
And still the states.
They're
so
the only one.
Basically, it already passes the congressional pre-approval under the terms of the Constitution.
Wow.
So they could, if they want to actually push that, and it might be some pushback, but they could break themselves up. And personally, given the size of the state, it would actually help it a lot.
It would help it economically. It would not help them politically.
No, I'm sorry. Well, economically, purely how the people live.
Here it is. Here it is. I found it. thanks to Snopes, actually, of all things. Let's see. The slavery issue, blah, 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 included a provision allowing Texas to be subdivided into up to four more states, with slavery being banned in states carved out of Texas territory north of the Missouri Compromise line and left up to popular sovereignty in states formed south of the line. The new states of convenient size, not exceeding four in number, in addition to said state of Texas and having sufficient population, may hereafter, by the consent of the state, be formed out of the territory thereof, which shall be entitled to admission under the provisions of the federal constitution, and such states may be formed out of the territory lying south of 36 degrees 30 minutes north latitude, commonly known as the Missouri Compromise Line, shall be admitted into the Union with or without slavery as the people of each state asking admission shall desire, and in such state of or states as such be formed out of said territory north of said Missouri Compromise Line, slavery or involuntary servitude except for crimes shall be prohibited. So, oh yeah, by the way, that whole Civil War thing, yeah, it was about slavery. Okay?
That's what it was about.
It's in the documents. It's right there. I just read it.
That important, it wouldn't be in the documents.
Yeah, yeah. They just put that in there as a catch-all.
It was a thing. I mean, come on. So
what would happen is Texas would become five separate states.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah, dividing with Texas being one of them, so four additional states, possibly.
Well, in some ways this would help certain of the new states because those would be the ones that are fiscally viable, whilst others would be, like Mississippi, one of the poorest in the Union. But my question for the political scientist is how would they fit into the Electoral College then?
Same way everything else is done. Again, the Electoral College is entirely designed off of population of states.
Each state would get a minimum of three.
Yeah.
By minimum.
Yeah, you take the number that Texas is at now, and it would be divided up the states based off of their population on top of the three that they get at minimum.
Yeah.
Yes and no. Because not all states are divided equally. Like, Florida should have more representation, but instead, smaller states with smaller populations, because they get three, regardless, they end up taking one of ours.
Yeah.
Right.
Because there is a cap on the total number.
The rest of the country...
But there isn't.
The way that I'm looking at this, the rest of the country, their electoral votes wouldn't change. Because if Texas broke into five states, that population would stay. So if you just kept the electoral votes for that area, and you had your base three for all five of them, that's 15, and then the difference between the 15 and what they have now would then just be divided up by the population of those states.
Oh, wait. Okay, well, but it would change, because remember, it's 538, right?
Yes.
So it's 538 right now. But that's because of the number of House of Representatives, the number of senators. So each state would get two senators. The number would change. It would no longer be 538.
Well, yes.
It would be
it would go up
540, 542.
Well, you're adding eight more. If you do four, you're adding eight more.
Yeah.
So it would be 546. But
that's just the senators. Am I missing some there, Stephen?
Go over it again. I'm actually researching the Electoral College really quick.
Okay. That's okay.
But even in that instance,
let's pause a second while he's doing this research. Yeah. And as someone who is on the outside of the political part of this, because I studied science, not politics, not government. How fucked up is it that it takes this much work to figure this shit out? How screwed up is our whole election process?
Well, no.
It makes that science you learn seem real easy.
Yeah. It's like
real easy.
Let's talk about the quantum state of water again. That was way more fun.
Let's do that. That made sense to me.
This is just the quantum state of politics. And guess what? It's not allowed in classical.
Wow. Yeah.
It's forbidden classically.
That's right. It's forbidden classically.
Political science is, in fact, a science, but the problem is our variables change because people.
Yeah.
Proof.
Yeah.
But
it's the science of politics and people, man.
Part of the reason why this is harder is, we don't invest in civics anymore in our education now, do we?
On purpose. On purpose.
You know, I was totally going through the number 538 in my head, and I realized, oh, yeah, that's right. District of Columbia gets 3 as well.
That's yes. Right, yeah. Yeah, D.C. gets 3.
So what was your question?
So the 538 is made up how? What is the, you know, it's... It's
the total population of the House of Representatives House plus the 100 senators
okay.
plus yeah so, plus the 3 that come out of
okay
DC.
So
DC
yeah, so the I House mean, wouldn't have to change that well, would, that could stay
no,
the same
no the House numbers would change because
you would just break up how they're divided you would still have the same number of representative house wise it's the senators that would have to change because you have 2 per
yeah.
state
well isn't
unless because
well, no,
they
there's
broke
a minimum
off.
There's a minimum though.
For
so if one of those states ended up having a smaller population, because, you know, Texas is huge. It takes forever to drive across it, even.
Right.
So there's yeah. large swaths of Texas that don't have anybody in it.
Right, and that's part of the problem in breaking up into
right.
those states.
But if one of those states with a very small population, a population, say, like...
Montana. Let's just use Montana.
Yeah, Montana. Yeah. Montana's a great one because it's very representation of the
what we're talking about here with
yeah,
large
the, of
space.
The type of the type of environment. Well, yeah. So they'd have there is a minimum number of representatives that they can have. So even there, so there's a possibility that there simply would be. So it'd go 538, 540, 42.
Just
so
as
it,
a
it might be it might be 550, and then Nate Silver's got to get a new domain name.
But just as a breakdown with like how the representation works, right now that area is populated at a point that allows for a certain number of representatives in the House.
Yeah, and it'd be through weird math and not exactly gerrymandering.
The smart
but kind
way,
of
the smart way to do it would be to not change that representation because yes, even though you do have a state that's sparsely populated, one of those states is going to be very densely populated. So
yeah.
they're going to pick up the representation that the sparse state loses. So just it goes to them, and yeah. in that case, it's you're hoping it's the Austin area where it ends up being very Democratic leaning.
Well,
you know,
Austin will end up being in one state.
Right.
You know?
So it's just one of those things where that representation stays the same. So in the easy, smart way to
unless
do it.
Unless it's like the Four Corners area or something
yeah.
like that, you know, where yeah. they gerrymandered
well,
the hell out of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it'll be the Four Corners and then the circle in the middle. So Austin still gets to be its own state. They just name that Texas. And it's like, people are then like, oh, Texas is awesome.
No, it would be turned to Austin. And then we'd have Texas. We'd probably have a state referred to as Houston.
The state of Houston, currently underwater and in you know shoveling a lot of mud.
Womp
yeah.
womp.
Yeah, which is just oh man. Have you seen some of the pictures and the videos coming out of Houston?
I have. It's terrifying.
Again, Texas, thanks to climate change, has become a terrifying and strange place.
There is posting in the chat an actual population density map of. Texas.
Okay. Let me see
Lordy.
If I can pull that up. That's a cute little thing. Let me just do a share that screen. Screen cap! I just want this. There we go. Okay.
Bingo, bango, bongo.
Bingo, bango, bongo. There we have. Nice big representation of Texas. So that's a lot of green. Which is a very, very, very sparse. Less
Whoa.
Than 1 per square mile is the darkest of the green. And that's a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say, all the way to the west, that's a lot of square miles with less than 1 per.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's where the main ranch lands are in Texas, where all the cowboy moves, all the cattle drives, and all that kind of stuff, that'll occur out there.
Yeah.
So it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of acres and one family.
Yeah. Now typically you've got and they own all that land. Now typically you've got borders are natural phenomenon. You know, things that are, you know, can't be can't be changed. It's just a nice border, and they use it. So
yeah, lakes, rivers,
yeah, they're all right there.
Mountain ranges, yeah.
So as you can see, most of the counties and areas are, it's a grid. I mean, they're big squares where they're possible. Until they're not possible, and then it's like, oh, well, that's a river. That's obviously a river. It goes squiggle, 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 squiggle. Let's see. Yeah. Oh, good. My cursor shows up. Oh, yeah, here we go. Down, 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 down. I'm not sure what river that is. Definitely feeding into the Colorado.
I was going to say, these four right in the middle that you were just kind of by, where it's like square, 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 and then that whole outer edge.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. But, yeah, you definitely, it's like, okay, so let's see. Well, there's Houston. There's Austin. So I'm not sure how I would even try to divide Texas up.
Oh, I see a way.
Well, there's they proposed, which was back in the late 1800s, State of Jefferson, which is that western corner section cutting almost straight down to the tip of Texas.
Just the tip.
Just for a minute.
Almost all of that,
just to
really
see
like
how it feels.
Down there would be one state.
Okay.
What, like straight horizontally across?
No, down on an angle.
So from the square top down?
Let me see if I can actually pull it up.
Well, I see you can fit something that looks like Nebraska twisted so it's vertical. You can do up towards the top, chop off the panhandle and leave it as its own thing. And then you have something that looks like India, and then the remainder.
It's a tiny image, and I apologize for that, but there.
Okay, hang on. All of your thumbnails have kind of gone wonky on me, so hang on. I'm trying to refresh you all for our video feed, which is not working so well, but that's okay because I have a manual kill switch here. We'll just
they can hear us.
Blunk, blunk. We'll just reboot that thing. Okay, so yes.
He's activating the kill switch.
That does not affect anything there, so it'll come back up in a second. Okay, so you've got... There you are. They're very good. Okay, so what is this? The Lincoln... Okay, so that's...
Oh!
Yeah, State of Lincoln.
Huh. Okay.
That was back in the 1800s. That's interesting. One of the proposed states.
Now, obviously, in that... Pretty much. Yeah, and that most breakup, they're not going to go for four additional states. I mean, there's just not really a way to do it.
Well, the four additional states thing was when Texas extended to California. You know, there's a little caveat there. You know, at the time that was designed, Texas was much bigger than even the huge Texas that it is now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it made better sense. It's like, yeah, that's a big area.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking Louisiana Purchase here. You know, we should probably cut that up a little bit. You know, it'd just be hell to maintain, especially in the days of the Pony Express kind of stuff, when, you know, mail did not travel that fast. And secession seemed like a great idea and burgeoned among the population, and Washington had no idea. You know, those things happen. But now, in the information age, little things like this get squashed rather quickly. And then simple things like, oh, yeah, you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, that's just not going to fly.
That's a whole lot of nope.
It's a great thing as a rallying point to drag people together and say, hey, look, we can do this thing. And it's a great way to start an us versus them kind of dialogue.
Another straw man.
But if you get into actual, like we've discussed here, if you get into actual breakdown of the realistic logistics of this, no, there's almost no way in hell it can ever happen.
It's a nightmare.
Realistic logistics.
Well, yeah. Going to global politics for a moment.
Okay.
This is the same sort of argument for why Ireland doesn't want Northern Ireland.
I'm afraid they're going to have to blast.
Back in the 2000s, the UK was thinking about, we're going to give Northern Ireland back to the Irish. And Ireland went, no, we don't want that debt. You took it, you keep it.
We don't care what the IRA says. You took it, you keep it, you pay for it.
Well, no, you keep what you killed.
Northern Ireland is a giant financial drain.
It is.
And that was part of the reason why during the talk about Scotland breaking off, the UK was like, please don't go. Whatever you do, please don't go. You're the thing that's propping up Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of that. But that's for another time, I think. We should move along, because it's late.
Fair.
So, okay, enough with Texas. But who popped in the other article for SCOTUS? How the Supreme Court has changed since Anton Scalia died.
I did, mainly because when you started this, you were talking about, you know, what prompted you to want to start a segment called This Week in SCOTUS. Yep. And while you couldn't remember, I could. And basically what happened was you had posted a story and you were talking about how since Antonin Scalia's death, the Supreme Court has had at least two, possibly more, 4-4 ties on votes. And that's where you were saying, you know, the lesser known cases that are being seen right now, because they are in session and may stay at 8 justices throughout that session. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of 4-4 situations coming up where basically it's just going to uphold whatever the lesser court said. So nothing's really getting done. And, you know, that's what made you really want to look into this, because those 4-4, you know, decisions, nobody really knows about unless you're seeking them out or your news aggregator just happens to say, like, hey, pay attention over here.
Yeah, so let's see. Does this have them in here?
Yeah, actually it does. They talk about one being for... already the justices have issued 2-4-4 opinions, one of them in a high-profile case concerning public sector union fees. Before Scalia's death, conservatives were expected to win the case and deal organized labor a major blow by overturning 40-year-old court precedent. But after his death, the justices announced that they were deadlocked. When they are evenly split in an opinion, they automatically affirm the lower court, which in this case handed an unexpected victory to supporters of unions. The other one being, they look like they're headed to a 4-4 split on a case brought by religious nonprofits to Obamacare's contraceptive mandate. You know, at this one, they've basically said, hey, we need more briefs on this case because they want to avoid a 4-4. They're trying to see if someone will change their mind by getting more information.
Yeah.
And the Obama administration is using this to be like, let's get Merrick Garland confirmed. Like, let's get this done so we can go back to, at the very least, 5-4 one direction or the other. You know, it...
And he's
back,
such
back to progress.
A conservative... He would be a conservative justice.
Well, I don't know. I think he might be more of a Kennedy, where he's, you know, just right there... He can go either way. Basically, he'd be another swing.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, that's the way I want the justices to be.
They should all be like
that. He's more liberal than Scalia was, so.
That's true, but that's also not hard.
That doesn't mean he's not still conservative, because you know how far to the right we are.
But you also, you brought up a thing I said in there about the fact they want more briefs filed for these cases that don't have a 4-4 tie in the current set of things. What most people don't understand, I didn't understand until I started taking criminal justice classes, where we study the Supreme Court. There's a thing called the amicus curiae briefs, which translates as friend of the court. Yeah, Supreme Court justices don't have time to read all of the stuff and sit down and delve into the nitty-gritty of these decisions. So people out there, a lot of court lobbying groups or just interest groups, file these briefs with the Supreme Court to help push the particular view they have in a case.
Yeah, sometimes it's explaining one thing or another, or at least, you know, it's putting their coin on the side of that justice, basically. It's like, okay, you know, in the great scales of justice, it's like, I'm going to put my coin over here. You know, that kind of thing. So it says, one of the principal jobs of the court is to ensure that when a federal law issues, there is a nationwide rule that applies throughout the country. Just wanted to state that one more time, that the things that the Supreme Court does apply nationally. It's not that a state can then say, nah, We don't want activist judges, you know, deciding what is good for us. It's like, no, that's not what they do, and you're just showing your ignorance of the actual system.
Yeah.
Arrgh, rage. That's what this is. It's all rage.
Pure rage.
So, yeah. This is something that we're going to continue to look at. You know, it is now in the show notes, therefore there will be something every week as long as there is something to put in there. And it may not even be about the Supreme Court. It might be about another court ruling or something like that. But that's going to be the way of it going forward to the show. So I hope that serves us well. Because, boy, we haven't been served well so far. Not by us, but by, you know, the government and pundits, news folk, journalists.
Media has changed so much.
It has. It has. And
for the better.
Mainstream entertainment.
Yeah. And that's another thing that this election cycle has really highlighted. You know, the
skewing
divide.
Because they want access. It's now about access. Beforehand, no, the politicians sought the media out because the media was how they got known. But now it's the media, since they need to have those ratings, they want access. And now the power is sitting with the politicians as opposed to the media, who could used to hold the fire to their feet and were actually able to get somewhat honest answers out of them.
Yeah, but now in the just selling soap cycle, it's more important for the journalists to be able to get that than it is for it to be the other way around.
Yeah, no, you need access because you can get locked out, and when that happens, all of a sudden you as a reporter are up a creek without a paddle.
It's an ironic kind of counterpoint to the democratization of media. Because all of us, I have a podcast. I'm talking about it. You know, in theory, I would possibly be able to get, you know, any representative around here to be on for a little bit, to interview them.
In theory.
I'd probably have to do the softball questions unless I didn't care about ever talking to them again. Yeah, and that's the thing. So we're all hungry for the attention. We're all trying to get attention. And they're the ones that can give you that attention, because then it's seeking that authority base. It's interesting. It's an interesting, you know, change of power structure. And yet, for the common people that don't have a webcam and a mind to put all this together, that just want to sit back and enjoy the show, as it were, you know, that we are the voice of the people. There's so many things that they could go to now. We don't have to have the major networks. We don't have to have the big three, for sure. And then, you know, at that point, it was really important. Because you had to have those people in order to reach the mass media, to reach everybody. You had to get on with Barbara Walters on, you know, 60 Minutes. You had to have
the water
that
cooler. Yeah. The water cooler moment.
Yeah.
You had to have that. And also, again, the shift already started to happen as print media started to die, which really didn't happen until the internet started catching on and moving forward. Because beforehand, print media still had a voice, still had some strength. But with the advent of the internet and the propagation of media, the democratization of media, print media is now no longer vital. You can have people lock folks out from any number of significant papers. Their press credentials can just be revoked. They have to be given access. Like they used to be. I mean, you know, part of the strength of our media back in the print days was that, hi, if you were with any, like, major city's paper, you didn't have to do...
They couldn't afford bad press.
Yeah, they couldn't afford bad press, and then you had to give these people access. You had to. Now, they don't need to.
Yeah. it's an interesting power struggle that we've found ourselves now a part of. So it's fun in a way, and well, damning in another. But at least we understand the nature of the problem. You know, we can sit back and we can look at it and we can analyze our own position on it, which is good. We need that. Okay, so that's a look at things in the future, and now we're into a slightly modified good, bad, and the ugly. We're now just going to do good ideas and bad ideas. So again, I'll need to change the bumpers because you know the others are not appropriate anymore. But good ideas: criminal charges in Flint over the water crisis.
Yes.
What?
Great ideas.
Somebody's actually going to go and
accountability in government?
How
no.
does that happen?
It sort actually of? Looks like there may be plenty of people that are going to go. These are just the first three. Basically, whoa. The Attorney General, they've got criminal charges. Right. Well, they have an investigation going on right now, led by former FBI agent Andy Arena and Special Prosecutor Todd Flood. Arena actually built his career busting corrupt politicians. So the Attorney General is actually doing the right thing by having, you know, these two men lead up the investigation. And, you know, the Attorney General basically guaranteed more charges and a $1.5 million investigation led by these two men. We'll go wherever the truth takes us, he said. In this case, wherever the emails take us. So, I mean, they're looking at the evidence. They're looking at what's there, who was involved, who said what, who knew what. And they're starting. These guys are essentially low-level guys. You know, or mid-level employees, or if the page will cooperate with me, basically you've got a mix of felony and misdemeanor crime charges. Stephen Bush and Michael Prisby of the State Department of Environmental Quality and Flint Utilities Administrator Michael Glasgow are charged with tampering with evidence. So mid-level guys, kind of mid-level, you know, charges, but there is some felony stuff involved there, but it's the start. It is a step in the right direction on making sure the people responsible for this are paying in some way.
The Attorney General said no one is off limits. Arena, who built a career busting corporate politicians, appealed to people who committed wrongdoing but want to cooperate. Quote, usually the first person on the train gets the best seat. Nice.
And it's really only going to take a few. I mean, if these three guys, you know, Bush and Prisby currently have pled not guilty and Glasgow hasn't appeared in court yet, but these three guys go through the court process and end up getting found guilty, and then, you know, the courts are stern on them and come down on them the way that they should, and then you see other people start to panic, you're going to see that rush of people coming forward to try and make a deal to avoid, you know, potential, you know, fallout, and then it's all going to flood in from there.
Excellent. I don't really have much more to say about this other than you know, get your popcorn ready.
No, I only have a sad note on this one, which is, again, more deaths. This time, two individuals who were plaintiffs in
the suits. Many lawsuits. They have like 94 lawsuits, I think.
Oh, geez, 94?
Okay. Yeah. But two of the significant mothers in a case where their kids have been poisoned were murdered. One of them, whose name I've got handy, was Sasha Ivana Bell, woman in leading.
Shot to death in her home by masked gunmen. A lot of people are calling government assassination to silence them.
But apparently there's a suspect in custody, but yeah, two of these plaintiffs have been murdered.
Yeah.
Wow.
I believe both of them were in the same place. Like, they were both in that house.
I'm not certain. I do know that there was a small child that was left in Sasha Ivana Bell's residence. Right now, that small child is being cared for by Department of Children and Families. So, yeah.
Yeah.
real sad.
That is sad, dark. News, but yeah, that is a bit suspicious.
I would also like to point out that at least one of these women is a person of color, and Michigan has proven recently they don't give a damn about black lives.
Well, I would say that at least as far as Flint is concerned, no lives matter.
It does say a woman at the center of the Bellwether Flint water crisis lawsuit was one of two women who were shot to death inside a townhouse earlier this week. The other woman was Sequoria Renee Reed, and then they said an unharmed one-year-old child. I was wrong. It's not 94 lawsuits. It's 64 lawsuits filed on behalf of 144 children. Wow. Bell's case was one of those cases.
Wow.
Oy.
This is...
It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
And I'll go ahead and add this to the show notes as well, so it's okay. that follow-up.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, very much. Okay, so I had an article that I wanted to bring up because, you know, we've seen a great deal of banter back and forth about
yes.
about the whole North Carolina, you know, HB2, you know, all that. Well, there is fallout from these decisions, and I think we could chalk them up to what's known as unintended consequences. The UK has warned travelers. They've issued a travel advisory notice. You know, this happens for people that you know, countries that have, like, wars going on. You know, where, like, I would possibly have a travel advisory, you know, for me, that says that atheists probably shouldn't go to the Middle East. Anywhere in the Middle East. You know, that kind of thing. Because,
well, again,
you might die.
Most countries, when they issue a travel warning, it is for the fear of their citizens in going to that region.
It's a safety
pretty much,
thing.
Hi, please don't go here. You're probably going to have something bad happen.
You're going to have a bad time, okay? That kind of thing.
We have some really cool stuff in the UK, too. Maybe you could, like, stay?
Yeah. So, the UK has warned travelers to the United States about the anti-LGBT laws in North Carolina and Mississippi.
You know, it's a serious warning because there is a serious risk of physical harm.
Yeah.
Up to and including death in these areas.
The recent slate of anti-LGBT legislation proposed and passed in some states, U.S. states, has not gone unnoticed by the rest of the world. On Thursday, CNN reported that the U.K. government had added an update to its official foreign travel advice for visitors of the U.S. under the, quote, local laws and customs section, because we're customarily bigoted here in the United States.
Yep.
Quote, the U.S. is an extremely diverse society, and attitudes toward LGBT people differ hugely across the country. LGBT travelers may be affected by legislation passed recently in the states of North Carolina and Mississippi.
Wow, what an understatement.
Now, I would like to point out that...
Yeah, it's classic
having,
British.
Having been in the military, we get especially briefed on these kinds of travel advisories because military people go all over.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very aware of what they are and what they're for. Governments don't issue these warnings unless there is a risk of serious injury or death. That's what they're for. The kinds of places that these warnings usually go to are war-torn nations,
yeah.
Places in the Middle East, third world countries. That's how far America has fallen. We are on a watch list that is usually reserved for places where you might get shot.
I know a guy in this picture.
Welcome to America.
I know a guy in this picture. the larger bald guy right in the middle. He's Shane Thrapp, and he's wearing the shirt for No Religion Required. who have been on the show before. So, hey, how about that? Anyway, the warning refers to both HB2, the so-called bathroom bill that recently passed in North Carolina, which bans trans people from using public restrooms that are not assigned of their assigned at birth gender, and Mississippi's religious freedom law, also recently passed, that legalizes discrimination against LGBT people if it is, quote, consistent with a sincerely held religious belief or moral conviction, end quote, reports CNN.
Yeah, this also is being picked up by several of the, shall we say, more extreme conservative groups that I tend to enjoy trolling. And I don't think you really want me to read some of the responses to this, because it's just...
Never read the comments.
This isn't responsible for anybody with an actual functioning brain.
Yeah, just never read the comments. Comments are bad. The anti-LGBT legislation passed in North Carolina and Mississippi have received widespread criticism from within the U.S. just after HB2 passed in March. North Carolina residents began tweeting out their opposition to the bill with hashtag, quote, hashtag, we are not this. A slew of musicians, including Bruce Springsteen, Mumford & Sons, Ringo Starr, Annie DeFranco, and Cyndi Lauper, have taken a stand against the bill. Yeah, lots of boycotts. Boycott NC is also another hashtag that you can look up and get all sorts of stuff on.
Oh, Henry Rollins just did a op-ed piece that was scathing on the North Carolina situation.
Scathing, you say? What did he have to say about it?
Yeah, though he, in typical Henry Rollins fashion, he let loose with both experience and his love of words.
love of words indeed. Let's see. Sorry about whoever was in the notes and working on the logical fallacy. I actually did not update that one, but I have a new one to put in. So we get there. Unless the, did you
I just I just picked from the
list. Oh, did you just pick one? Okay, yeah, that's cool. We'll do that one then. Okay. Never mind. Okay, so travel advisory against the United States. I don't think that I've ever seen that in the news.
No.
We're not being very good citizens of the world.
We sure aren't.
But these people who have been elected don't really care.
No, they don't. No, they don't. In their own little microcosm, they think that weather is climate, and they think that evolution doesn't happen, and that possibly the world is flat, and that we didn't go to the moon, and all sorts of number of things that are really demonstrably true. So, fun.
Fun is certainly a word you can use to describe it.
Well, you know,
it is not the word I would choose.
It is
a word you can use to describe
it. You can't spell dysfunction without fun. So,
but
there you go.
You're a bad man.
I've been told that. Okay.
Just now,
in fact, yeah. Okay.
You're a bad man.
All right, so we've got a logical fallacy, and. Fred, since you went and found one, your honors.
I guess if we're going to talk about, you know, beliefs and things that are, you know, widely held, I went with appeal to popularity. Appeals to popularity suggests that an idea must be true simply because it is widely held. This is a fallacy because popular opinion can be, and quite often is, mistaken. Hindsight makes this clear. There were times when the majority of the population believed that the Earth is still the center of the universe and that diseases are caused by evil spirits. Neither of these ideas was true, despite its popularity. As an example, 1, most people believe in a god or higher power. Therefore, 2, God or at least a higher power must exist. This argument is an appeal to popularity because it suggests that God must exist based solely on the popularity of belief in God. An atheist could, however, accept the premise of this argument. The claim that belief in God is widespread, but reject its conclusion without inconsistency.
This is one of those arguments that pushed me to research other religions. It is basically that argument, because it's like, well, how can a billion Christians be wrong? Well, but there's also like a billion Muslims. How can they be wrong? And there's also like a billion Hindus. How can they be wrong? How can they all be wrong? Or how can 2 billion of them be wrong and only that billion be right? So I researched all of them and said that they're all wrong. So that's how I got to the way I am. And yes, Dedranius in the chat room says, and that's part of why I'm an agnostic. And that is what made me an agnostic, which is kind of a stepping stone to losing all your faith and saying, nah, it's all wrong. And then you become an atheist, and then you get angry for a while because you essentially feel that everyone's lied to you for most of your life, and you're really, really pissed off at the entire world for a long time, and then you kind of go through those stages of grief, which, you know, are debatable as to how they're actually done. So it's not a hard and fast rule. So you kind of, you know, you phase yourself out of it. And, you know, you end up being angry for a while, but you're not going to be that way forever. So those of you that are concerned that suddenly somebody's going to lose their faith and they're just going to be the most angry, heinous person ever, don't worry. It's just a stage, like puberty.
Or the terrible twos.
Or the terrible twos. They'll grow out of it. They, however, may grow away from you. You know, it all depends. So. All right. So then we have our new section, bad ideas. Oh, by the way, I'm not sure that the travel advisory to the U.S. was a good idea. Well, I suppose it's a good idea for the LGBT people. But it's good idea, but overall, it's all about bad ideas.
It's awful.
It's got bad ideas all over it. So, bad ideas. President Obama extorts Britain not to leave the EU.
And this is kind of one of those same things where it's good idea, bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly good idea in like, hey, Britain, you shouldn't leave the European Union. That's for them to decide. I put it in the bad ideas because this seems a lot like Obama trying to protect a major piece of the TPP and essentially threatening trade if Britain did leave the European Union.
I believe you are correct.
And so it seems a little underhanded, especially for him to put himself into a position politically that they didn't ask him to be there. And if we go back a few, you know, shows, or not a few shows, but if we go back a few months ago when we were talking about the Iran nuclear deal and the underhanded way that, like, Republicans got Netanyahu to come over here and argue against that, this has a very small feel of that same thing, because now it's affecting something that he created and put out there. And as you guys, you know, yourself and Stephen went over extensively, you know, the TPP is not the best thing in the world. So if that's what he's
actually
doing here, you know,
it's super bad.
Still can't find anything good about it. Not a damn thing.
But let's be fair. When has Obama not used a tool in the political toolbox?
Oh,
he has been.
He's a craftsman. Absolutely.
He knows his craft and he knows it well.
Yeah.
He uses every single tool in the toolbox.
Including the special relationship between Washington and London, as it says.
Yeah, no. He has, when it's in his interest, he will use anything at his disposal.
Yeah, what gets me is looking at this article and reading it, one of the things it says, and quoting from it, on trade, he, being Obama, took aim at one of the main out arguments that Britain could more easily negotiate deals and get better terms on its own. The United States would regard a deal with the EU as a higher priority than a separate agreement with a much smaller market such as standalone Britain, Obama said.
It's not a smaller market.
And overall,
really
size of population, of, I mean, yeah, it is. And over,
but
because you have Germany, the center of the EU, which is honestly is the center of that entire economic agreement and alliance. It is a much, much bigger economic power.
Germany has a lot of manufacturing backing because despite the pounding they took in World War II, we did not destroy their industrial base, which says something for their industrial base and how well it was built. So as far as industry is concerned, Germany is the heart. Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but
their industrial base.
As far as buying
is
power
what
is concerned, it's all in the UK. As far as financial reserves, it's in Switzerland and Luxembourg.
Well, let's see. It's kind of still part of the EU.
It's kind of a complicated situation over there when you talk about economic power.
Yeah,
which is why they linked up in the first place.
But let's take a look here at both sides of the UK leaving or staying, because right now with Britain, they manufacture tons and tons of goods, and being part of the EU, since it's a collective bargaining organization, they're not necessarily getting the best deals on British goods.
No.
And that's one of the big arguments for them to leave, is so they can negotiate a better deal for the stuff they're exporting. Now, when it comes to importing, England's getting a better deal.
Yeah.
By being part of the EU.
And more than anything, I think that's why they should stay. I mean, it's a purely in their own self-interest, because everything has to be shipped to them. There are no ground routes. Everything has to be shipped.
Well,
they
there is the
need
channel. There is
a good deal.
Yeah,
but the channel is not enough. You know, comparatively, it's not enough. They really need good deals on imports, because getting something to the Isles is expensive.
And looking at the way you guys are splitting it, like that's kind of the heart of the matter. Like you're talking about, you know, on exports, they're losing out. You know, they think they can get a better deal, but on imports, that's where they're really making up that difference. And it's like, okay, England, I get what you're trying to do, but sometimes you can't have it both ways. The whole point of the EU is compromise. You're going to have to take a hit somewhere to get the benefit elsewhere.
You can't have it both ways. And I really think they are served better by biting the bullet on exports and making up the difference in imports.
But follow the money.
Yeah.
The reason why there's this push to
always
leave
the
EU
money
is from moneyed interest, because they're the ones that are making money off the exports.
Yeah, because they don't care about, again, it's just like here in America, they don't care about the overall health of the economy, which will serve them in the long run. They care about how many dollars goes in their pocketbook in the short term. And that's because they're morons.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at how it balances. If you're bringing more in money to your bank account because of the exports, but then when you need to import the supplies to build what you're exporting, but you're paying more, so now you look like you have more money, but look at what you're sending out. You've got the same money you had before.
So but it's the guys at the top. They're pushing to leave you.
And they're idiots.
Well, so the advantages
those of us in the United States, you know, we don't have to deal really with the EU except for, you know, knowing that it's a thing and that there's the euro dollar and, you know, that there's a bunch of states, you know, what is it, like 28, you know, 28 nations.
Member countries.
Nation states. We'll call them nation states because that's kind of what they end up being. Like, you know, if Tennessee would happen to be, you know, a nation like, you know, Croatia or something like that, you know, it'd be the same kind of deal. Just, you know, the EU is basically the equivalent of the U.S.,
what they were hoping for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They formed it. But it hasn't worked out that way.
Well, that's because nobody actually wants it. Not that way. They don't want to be controlled in that way. They still want all the benefits with none of the detriments.
They want a confederation. The actual system of government that is a confederation, which hasn't worked since ancient Greece. And arguably it didn't work then.
Yeah, arguably.
It's a great system on paper. But people are assholes and tend to screw it up.
Well, no, it also is a great system and on small scale, on a microcosm.
Yeah.
You can have a city that is run by confederation without a problem. You can have a county that is run by confederation without a problem.
It has
Once
a problem
you get
with scale.
Something that's dealing with any form of actual international contact, confederation becomes incredibly inefficient.
Yeah. It does not scale well.
No.
But essentially, There's a June referendum on membership of the European Union. That's what this whole thing is about, whether or not they will continue to be a member of the European Union. Because apparently, all these countries have an out. So, here in the United States, you know, again, that's something that we don't have to deal with, but it's something that we ought to know, that, hey, those countries over there, they don't have to play ball with each other. They can secede from the Union if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's essentially what they're talking about here, where the United Kingdom, England, Ireland, you know, they would just secede. Nope, we're not part of that anymore.
We out.
Back to pounds sterling.
Actually, no. They currently do use the pound sterling.
Yeah, they're the ones that didn't.
They never used the euro. The advantages of being part of the Eurozone, being part of the European Union, yet they did not go on with the one that required them to use the actual euro as a currency, which gives them, it literally, using the old phrase, it allows them to have their cake and eat it too. They get all the power of being in that big of an economic block, and yet
but
they still
get
have
their own currency.
Yeah, they don't have to because they would actually lose on switching to the euro.
Yeah, now
sterling is still fairly respected, and now with the Scottish Bank being the power that it is, Scotland would actually be the biggest loser if they switched to the euro.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, economics.
Now, something that occurs to me, which should have occurred to me earlier, Britain is in the Atlantic, not in the Pacific. You know, that whole Trans-Pacific partnership?
Yeah.
So they're not... The EU is not a part of the TPP. So what's Obama's play about here? Yeah, I mean, that's the stumper. It's like, okay, so what is he doing? Because is he dealing with the TPP, or is he trying to set up the TPP, or is this the Rothschilds, you know, world government? Nah, I'm kidding about that. I'm totally kidding about that. That's not a thing.
That's a little too tinfoil hat even for me, man.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's not a thing. That doesn't actually exist. But yeah, I mean, so does this have anything to do with the TPP?
I could see it in a way.
Is it just like an anti-competitive agreement kind of thing? Or is he trying to do the same thing with the EU, an Atlantic trade partnership?
Probably not. I think I have an idea on this. Because, okay, you've set up the TPP.
Mm-hmm.
The Eurozone is not going to go for a TPP-like agreement, and it's not going to interfere with the TPP. However, an independent Britain might try to interfere with the TPP. Might try to establish its own set of trade deals, which would fight against what's been established in the TPP with those nations that are signing up for it.
So basically, Britain would have its own Pacific partnership somehow,
which might run counter to the bylaws and things within the TPP.
Well, so that it benefits Britain. You know, used to the whole colonial thing, you know, with, you know, long spread trade routes and things like that. You know, they've got a rich history of it. You know, the sun never sets on the British Empire kind of thing. You know, it was true for a very long time. So is he just trying, you know, of course this is all conjecture. You know, feel free and connect whatever dots you see fit and, you know, let us know about them. But, you know, what is he trying to prevent them from subverting some other deals that he might have, you know, on the play here? I you know, we didn't hear a whole lot about the TPP until it was right on us.
Actually, one of the things that he could be doing with this is using it, again, getting a little tinfoil hatty, but not as much.
Well, we kind of have to about this, yeah.
It could be attempting to keep the countries in the Eurozone, Britain, etc., from jumping on to the Chinese version of the IMF. I forget what it's called. It's like the Asian Development Fund or something.
IMF would be the International Monetary Fund. IMF is...
Focusing solely on Asia, Southeast Asia, all those areas. Okay. And saying, come with us, do our thing, don't go through the IMF, because, let's be honest, the IMF has screwed over a lot of countries. It's good, but it screws people over.
Yeah.
But it's they have flat out said they do not want the U.S. as part of the one people throwing out money to this. They refused. This could be a way to put a damper on that by getting Eurozone countries not to throw money into that development fund.
Let me introduce everyone to the TTIP if you aren't already aware of it. The Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership is a proposed trade agreement between the European Union and the United States with the aim of promoting trade and multilateral economic growth. The American government considers the TTIP a companion agreement to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The agreement is under ongoing negotiations, and its main three broad areas are market access, specific regulation, and broader rules and principles and modes of cooperation. The negotiations were planned to be finalized by the end of 2014, but will not be finished until 2019 or 2020.
Part of the Obama legacy.
Yep. You were right, Andy.
There it is.
Sometimes I really hate it when I'm right. And no, I did not cheat. I don't know anything about that. I just came up with it.
Yeah, no, but congratulations.
So, I had a vision.
I had a vision. I connected the dots. Anybody can. You know,
just follow the money.
Follow the money. And it's like, wait, that's going on over there. What's he doing over here?
Swami Pastrami strikes again.
Swami Pastrami.
And so, yes. And so, yes, 100%.
We need Britain to get him a leaving. Turban now. We need to get him a turban.
A tinfoil turban.
A tinfoil turban. Ah!
We need this. Any of our listeners out there, please send Andy a tinfoil turban.
I'm dead.
We've lost, Michael.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I have succeeded in killing one. Oh,
that's beautiful. A tinfoil turban for my Swami Pastrami. If you don't know what Swami Pastrami is, go back to our April Fool's episode where I had a little soothsayer with a big tinfoil pyramid hat. Yeah.
I want to be in a tinfoil cowboy hat. After all, I'm a southerner. I can do it.
Absolutely. Oh, you can totally do it.
That hurts.
As it should.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Fred, do you have a link for the TTIP?
Matter of fact, he did.
Yeah, I threw it in there. It's a Wikipedia page all about the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. And I mean, really, basically everything that we were just talking about, Britain leaving the European Union, which could potentially cripple the European Union, would dissolve all of this, you know, potential.
Yeah. So that's it.
Damn, now I'm kind of wishing, I'm hoping that Britain leaves.
The TTIP.
Just take the TTIP out behind the chemical sheds and put two in the back of its head. Be done with it.
TTIP, Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership.
Just remember,
wow.
I look at this thing and all I can think of, you know what we need, how we need to refer to this thing? Just the tip.
Yeah, I was thinking just that.
You are an asshole, my friend.
We know this. You follow politics long enough, it becomes inevitable.
So really, the Affordable Care Act, yeah, that's nice and all. That's nice. Lots of, you know, the marriage equality thing, you know, a lot of good things that have happened.
No more don't ask, don't tell.
Under Obama, there's been a lot of good progress. We have to give that to him.
Incremental change.
Lots of incremental change, but in a big way. Sweeping incremental change. But it looks like his big legacy is global trade dominance.
So look forward to the future, listeners, to us going over this thing.
Oh, yeah. We should probably look into this.
I think we have to now.
I mean, if we can find relevant information, because as it says, it's right now it's looking like 3 to 4 years away from being finalized. Had we not done the research today, when would we have heard about this?
When it was just on top of us, like Andy said.
Exactly.
Show 250.
Just like the TPP. So it's one of those things where we may be able to find some stuff, but it may not be clear until after it's already gone through, and then there's thousands of pages of documents that we have to go through to figure out.
By the way, gentlemen, we are now all on the NSA's list.
Of course we are. I knew that.
Been there.
What? I wasn't already on?
Yeah, we probably...
I was already on the list.
We probably already were.
Looking at my porn.
I want at least 4 NSA gold stars. That's my
4?
Job.
Oh, okay. NSA gold stars. Oh, I think that... Maybe we have can do a Patreon level or something like that. You know, how many NSA gold stars?
Nice.
You know,
how many stars have you gotten from the Better Business Bureau and the NSA?
I want a tinfoil turban with gold star pips. you know, and a NSA Cold Star.
Stop mentioning the tinfoil turban, you asshole.
Nope. Oh, so by God. Oh. By Christmas of this year, I'm going to get a damn tinfoil turban.
Oh, this is a beautiful thing. Beautiful. If you know how to make a turban, I will get you shiny fabric.
Going over the link that Fred just shared for those listeners. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this the TTIP is projected to boost the European economy by 120 billion euros and the U.S. economy by 90 and the rest of the world by 100. Yes, yeah, so that is billion with a B.
Followed by an illion.
Yeah, but but it's going to give corporations so much more power and so much more sway.
According to Foreign Affairs, TTIP aims to liberalize 1/3 of global trade. So, we just stumbled on tonight, okay? We stumbled into this. This is enormous. I can't even fathom what we just like slammed into.
Yeah, so if next week you tune in and there's no show on and you haven't heard from us in a while, you know what happened. We got black bagged.
Yeah, it's a good thing we're live streaming this.
They never cleaned the bag.
So it was dry clean only, man.
Oh, wow. I'm befuddled. Okay.
So this will be the next big thing we do once we get more information.
Yeah, there's too much to look at that. So
Freedom of Information Act. We need to file one now.
Wow, man. I mean, somebody knew to put up a wiki article on it. So there is some information, you know, out there. but now we've got to go digging.
And as I say here, the contents of the competing proposals as well as reports on the TTIP negotiations are classified from the public.
Of course they are.
Shocking.
It was actually apparently a draft was leaked in March of 2014.
So exactly the same as the TPP. I bet.
Hi, guys. I love the nations. I love the intelligence community. Man. Guess what? There are hackers out there who are better than you. And they will find shit.
Yeah. This is big. This is
Anonymous
really
is real,
big.
And Anonymous will dig stuff up.
So,
and this is something Anonymous needs to work on. Like, give us more information, because we know you're listening too. We'll be on your list all day long. I want four Anonymous gold stars.
After all, we are here to amuse you, you know, and we're speaking directly to you, 4chan. We're here to amuse you. fly, my pretties, fly.
Oh, no. Dick butts for days.
Yeah. Okay. So.
No.
It's the internet.
No.
Dick butts
bad
for
side of the internet. Okay.
Make that happen.
Bad. This is
make
all bad. Your ideas are bad and you should feel bad.
This is something else. This is craziness.
I've stopped feeling bad.
Yeah. You kind of have to. I mean, we are all numb to the world and you know, becoming more so every day, especially the more news that we go through. Speaking of more news, voter purge in Brooklyn kept over 100,000 people from voting in the Democratic primary. I think it was over 200,000.
Well, yep. This is, I think it's 200,000 across the entire state of New York. It's over 100,000 just in Brooklyn alone, which is, of course, Bernie's home area. The reason why this really caught my attention is he lost by around less than 60,000 in that area. And if he had won that, it would have closed the gap. He may have even been able to take the whole state.
But no, I saw numbers statewide that showed that the number of independents who were unable to vote was larger than the margin he lost by.
Well,
and that is including when you consider that 70% of independents vote for him.
Well,
all of those independents had gotten to vote and the 70% average had voted for him, he would have won the entire
state. They were never going to vote because it's a closed primary system, the same as it is
again,
here
in
Florida.
Again, that's where I bring up your point, Michael, and say that's the whole thing of, again, my argument about political knowledge and political education.
Yeah.
People need to learn these kind of things. And any listener out there who's in a closed primary state, you know, yeah. I love you.
I'm saying is that, yes, I get it. It's a closed primary state, but these people were registered to vote for the Democratic side. They were independents who registered Democrat to vote specifically for this purpose.
Yeah, you're talking about the ones that lost. They were suddenly disenfranchised from their party choice. Yeah.
Which happened in Arizona as well. I mean, it happened there, too.
It's been happening all over.
Yeah, there's also things in other states where it's, you know, lifelong Democrats are suddenly thrown as independents or not registered at all.
Yeah, or they just can't vote at all. I mean, there was a lot of talk of, you know, if you hadn't voted in 4 years, which is roughly, I believe, the same length of time it takes between presidential elections. So if you're only a presidential election voter, you weren't going to be able to vote the next time without some action.
Yeah. What I love about this is the fact of Mayor Bill de Blasio, who is the mayor of New York City, actually looked at the numbers of voters who weren't able to vote and are going, yeah, okay, we've seen this across multiple elections, but the sheer amount that were coming out of Brooklyn that were not able to made him go, okay, we need to actually investigate this. Actually a Hillary supporter. But he's going, no, there's something wrong here. This needs to be investigated.
Yeah, but the person that they're appointing to investigate is a Hillary supporter.
So, of course, they're not going to find anything.
Well, not just a Hillary supporter, but one of the Hillary-pledged superdelegates.
And, you know, one of the things I read, and I'm trying to find the story, I wish I could, and it may be total actual tinfoil hat stuff. No, we're not going to go into the other, you know, head appendage or head covering, but do you remember early on in the election process, and there was that big story about the Sanders staffer who had looked at information from Hillary's voter rolls,
the partition failing,
right? Yeah. And so there was firewall a story fail. That put out the idea that staffer was actually
a plant
from the Clinton side that did that so that while that was going on, they could actually look at the voter rolls for Sanders supporters in different areas. And that's why most of these people that were purged were Sanders supporters. Like that it ended up being people that would have voted for him.
Oh,
that is a tinfoil hat thing.
Ooh. I believe it.
And that's why lately you've heard nothing about that. In fact, you heard nothing about it really after Bernie Sanders threatened to sue the DNC. Over that
story
situation.
From Gawker from December of last year, so December of 2015, Bernie Sanders' advisor says DNC fed them staffer who stole Clinton voter files.
Yeah, so it was the DNC told them to work. Yeah. But, you know, the DNC would already have access to that information because it's their information that the candidates are leasing from them. They already would know. No shenanigans would ever have to be played if it was just the DNC that was doing it. So, in a way, that takes the blame off of the DNC?
No, they're just making sure that they divide attention between exclusively the Hillary camp and the DNC. If too much heat piles onto either side, then there's an obvious enemy. As long as there's problems on both sides, people are confused. If people are confused, they can get away with more shit.
I think that may be too Machiavellian.
Back to it as a cutout.
I don't think it is because it's been a few weeks since I've heard anything on the calls for Wasserman Schultz to be looked into more. It's definitely a tipping point. I think Michael has something here. Every time you start to get too much in the way of like, oh, we need to get Wasserman Schultz out of there. Oh, Hillary does something that puts the fire back on her. And then once it becomes...
It's a shell game.
Yeah,
they keep moving it around and moving it around, and the trick of it is that it's not under any of the shells. It's in it's in the con man's palm the whole time. They're both in on it. We know that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is a huge friend of Hillary. We know that Hillary and Bill have been running around doing real shady shit all election. We know that everyone's in on it, but they keep pointing at anything they can, saying, hey, look at this shiny over here, to get people confused.
And it's working. unfortunately.
Again, my theory is something far less nefarious. It's just that you have a number of people who are diehard supporters of Hillary that are just doing their own independent thing to fuck things up. There's no other word. Fubar.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I go with the easier explanation. Instead of having this giant spider web, it's a bunch of independent people who are going about doing things because they know they can.
If the simpler answer gets
not,
there.
But it's not difficult for this giant spider web to exist. It's a political dynasty. Once a political dynasty is entrenched, it's real easy to work with. That's how the Kennedys do everything that the Kennedys do and did for so long. The Clintons are a political institution. All they need to do is call in favors that they earned 20 years ago. This is not hard for them to orchestrate.
Yeah, many of the favors that they've earned don't even require any quid quo pro.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Well,
If anything, and we talked about it earlier in the show, if anything, what this is highlighting is how messed up this system is. And it's also making people look at it, and with any hope, it's going to lead to some kind of change. It may not be the change that we're wanting immediately, but, you know, like we were talking about with the age of the internet and the way that, you know, everyone is looking at things and the way that, you know, when we see something that's not right, we are immediately, as a nation state of internet landia, calling for it to be reviewed. This needs to be looked at. This needs to be changed. That is the only good thing I can take out of this right now.
As I've said so many times on the show, and other people have said, it's the idea of you cannot have a short political memory. We cannot have that as a people in this country, because you have to remember what's going on. You have to remember what's happened in the past, and you have to keep calling people on it until it is addressed.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I've always prided myself on is the ability to correlate information. You know, completely disparate systems that have, you know, some problem that I encountered with, like, a tape drive in a system that no longer exists, you know, 8 years ago. I can somehow make sense of on, like, a voice recognition system, you know, 10 years away from that, that has very little to do with it, but it was, like, maybe that little fix or something that came together. Having that long memory of, you know, various things that may not really correlate at the time, they don't seem to make any sense at all, but suddenly, like tonight, seeing, it's like, wait, what's he doing over there talking about trade? Wait a second. Again, correlation. You know, you come up with these things, you're able to connect dots. And as good citizens of Internetlandia, you know, we have a lot of dots that we have to choose from. A lot of things that we can correlate and figure out how this world is working. And we are the new generation of how this world works. You know, this is new media. You know, we're not the Young Turks. We don't have a big, you know, lots of screens behind us and, you know, reporters out in the world. We're sifting through what other people have done for us. But that doesn't mean that we can't come up with our own ideas. We can't do, you know, a meta-analysis of all this stuff and come up with something. And that's what we're doing here, and hopefully we're doing it with your help. So I don't know what to say about all the voter fraud other than, you know, again, it's part of the whole system unraveling before us. You know, we're seeing all the chinks in the armor. We have to remember it going forward, you know, into November. You know, we're going to have some very hard decisions to make as a nation, a lot of hard decisions to make. You know, as we get closer, I know that I'm going to look through the sample ballots, and we're going to pick apart people, you know, for our various districts and things like that. You know, we're in Florida here, so we have those people to look through. But I think we could probably come up with a few more important battleground states, things that are, you know, things that are going wrong in the rest of the country that we can really look at the people that are up for re-election, and we can kind of go through their quick history and give them a rundown and say, no, this person needs to go away.
Oh, we could have a senatorial edition.
I think we should, because really, those people do more than any president could. You know, Obama is looking for a legacy, obviously. He's got plenty already on his plate, but now he's like going for the gold ring, you know, with the whole global trade, you know, agreements here. This is really something unexpected. Did not see this coming. Yeah, I've come back to that because it's just too big. You know, it's on my mind. I can't get away from it.
Spider that's under the web.
Yeah, it's like this is huge. But he can only do so much. You know, he's moving pieces on the board as best he can, and then he's going to be gone. He certainly wants Hillary to be in because she's been one of the pieces that he's been moving around. She will pick up exactly where he left off.
Yeah.
And all of these
trade safeguard his legacy.
And yeah. Safeguard the legacy. And she's been riding those coattails throughout all of the debates. You know, always defending everything that he's done and towing the line. You know, she's going to keep them going. If you like what he's done, that's great. So she's riding that straight to the White House if she can. And unfortunately, it's looking like she probably is going to do it unless some amazing things happen in California. Because California is really going to be the big one.
I mean, he's not out of the race.
No, he's not. No, there's still
it's actually tighter than it was between Hillary and Obama. But
Lincoln, people don't realize there's still 1,400 delegates still available.
There's tons of delegates out there.
And it is a lot about momentum, you know, a lot of those things. And also it matters with – we can't directly compare 2008 to now. We can't directly compare 2012 to now.
Yeah.
Because the order that the states went in for the primaries is gone.
Has changed, yeah.
Yeah, it's different now. So we can't even draw that direct comparison. It's just different. So, yeah, right now, they're about even, but that was after, you know, for them, that was after California had already, you know, put their votes out there.
Yeah.
So this is very different. It's a very, very different time. And I don't think that, with New York, Nate Silver and 538, like the very morning they were saying, yeah, well, you know, we might be wrong. You know, just right then. They have no idea what's going to happen. So even the people that are doing all the big analysis, they've got all the tools, they've got all the knowledge, you know, and they've got long memories, they know what's happened before too. They're still trying to hedge their bets so they don't ruin their reputation because they don't know what's going to happen. It's a lot of reputation that's on the line here so that people will continue to be relevant. A lot of you must continue to be relevant because this is a long game that these politicians play. Long game. And things like all this voter fraud, you know, to bring it right back around, this is part of that long game. What are they going to do? They're not used to the new media. They're not used to people like us being able to pick it apart and look at the various correlated events that are going on. And remember that this happened in this state and this happened in this state.
And they are certainly displeased that fewer and fewer people are listening to the media that they've bought and paid for, and more people are doing what we're doing.
Oh, yeah, this grassroots movement that Bernie has got going for him scares the shit out of him.
Oh, yeah.
This is off their radar.
More than anything, should be telling to people of just how much... How much we can really accomplish, because if we weren't a threat, they wouldn't be throwing everything they have at us.
Wasserman Schultz has said, you know, directly that the superdelegates are there to protect from a grassroots candidate that they do not approve of. Who is the grassroots candidate that they do not approve of?
And translated, what that statement is saying is that the superdelegates exist to keep the power out of the hands of the people, which is where it is supposed to be in a democracy.
To keep it where they want it.
Exactly.
Wherever it happens to be. Sometimes it's in their best interest to have it in the hands of the people.
Lincoln, they want to have it in the hands of the right people.
Yeah, that's it. The right people.
Yes, but who determines what the right people is? They do. Not the majority vote, as is supposed to be in a democracy, which is why it's all bullshit.
Go ahead,
again,
Daniel.
Looking at the original way it was done, it was, are you a landowning male?
Yeah.
It was bullshit. It was bullshit then. It's bullshit now.
But one thing I can stress to all of our listeners and viewers, if you want to get a good insight into how things are going and how distorted our media is, look to foreign media.
Yeah.
Covering our election.
Because they look at us like we're insane. We are so far to the right, we're unrecognizable to any other country.
But again,
travel advisory.
Look at their coverage. The external coverage of our election is probably going to be the most enlightening coverage.
Again, looking at I look at Al Jazeera regularly every day, and seeing their reports, and no, a lot of countries out there are not laughing. They are absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
About the idea of a Trump presidency.
Yeah. There's over 300,000 votes, signatures on a petition to make sure that Trump can never set foot in Great Britain.
Yep.
To put him on a do not fly list, basically.
Mm-hmm. But no, go out,
yeah.
Seek out places like The Independent, The Guardian, Al Jazeera.
Yeah.
There are also translated versions of both German and French media sites out there for you to peruse.
Also educate Japanese?
Go ahead. Educate yourselves and get the global perspective.
It's so sad that Al Jazeera America shuttered. It is so sad. You know, speaking of them, that they were one of those media outlets that told it like it was, not how it needed to be portrayed so they could keep the viewers. And what happened?
They had shuttered.
They had to shutter because the power brokers weren't paying them. It was a non-sustainable business model. Telling the truth is a non-sustainable mm-hmm. business model.
If there was money in truth, everyone would be doing it.
Yeah.
No, if there was money in truth, Rupert Murdoch would be doing it.
Yeah.
Well, Rupert Murdoch, well, his family is on.
You know, once upon a time, yeah. There was money in truth. What the hell happened?
Well, no, the greatest thing about Rupert Murdoch, I forget who it was, somebody who wrote a book on him. And understanding back then, when that book was written, it was the idea of, this is only about 5 years ago or so. The guy said, you know, no, Rupert Murdoch doesn't really believe most of the stuff. It's all about money. And the question was asked this person who had spent like 2 years in this guy in Rupert's life and researching all this stuff, said, so if there was money to be made doing like liberal bias, doing hardcore, you know, basically liberal Fox News,
mm-hmm.
hard left news, would he switch? The answer was faster than a heartbeat.
It's like, absolutely. Of course he would. Okay, with that, I think we need to get to wrap up here because you guys are yawning and I'm tired too. But it's definitely time for that. So let's roll on to entertainment reviews, Nick's picks, and things like that. What do we have to share with the world from our own brain pans? So I will go later because I've been talking.
I love that you love what I posted. That thing's amazing. But
it
we'll get
is.
To that.
Amazing, yeah, that's definitely my pick. So,
my nitpick this week is a game that I've played a bit. I can thank Dan for introducing me to this game. Thank you, you bastard. it's called The Killing Floor. It's a zombie survival first person shooter. Like, you know, standard first person shooter, you fight waves of zombies. It gets progressively more difficult until you fight a boss at the end across multiple maps. They have various difficulties from beginner all the way to suicidal, which is literally what it says. For the character in the game, at least. But no, it's fun. It's a good community when I get people there, all about working together. So don't worry about anything you deal with most people yelling at you and screaming at you for being, you know, being a fucking noob. They've recently come out with a playable alpha or playable beta, for Killing Floor 2, which I have not yet done, which I am looking forward to. It's using the more updated engine, so the graphics are a lot prettier. And a lot smoother. But it's a fun game. It's a great way to kill half an hour just going through 10 waves of zombies. And it's a great way I just want to shoot somebody in the head and you go out there and do that in this game. It's fun, exciting, and it's a great way just to pass some time. Also, I've apparently gotten really good at killing things at range with a pistol, so I pistol snipe now.
Pistol sniping. Nice. This is some interesting looking things that you have to go against.
I hate those things so much. Those aren't that bad.
Sirens. Husks. Scrake? Okay. You guys basically have to... Oh, what the heck is that?
That's the boss you face once you've done 10 waves.
Okay.
And he's
well,
capable of instant killing in melee.
The Patriarch. That's... So
that's
a thing.
That's properly terrifying.
That is properly terrifying.
The Patriarchy.
Yes.
You can literally fight the Patriarchy.
That's... That's kind of cool. That's pretty cool.
You have various weapons, you have various skins you can run, male, female. Hell, the one I'm running right now is a steampunk gentleman doctor, so...
Okie dokie. Yeah. Well, this is interesting. So you can find it at killingfloorthegame.com. No spaces, all one word.
It's also available on Steam, so go out there, get it, and play.
It's definitely on Steam, I remember that.
It's definitely a thing. How much does it cost?
That version, actually, I don't know if
I
can
tell you. I believe it's about $10.
Yeah, it should be less now. Let's see, Killing Floor is actually currently $20. Okay. But it's one of the ones that almost always comes up on a Steam sale.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do all their sales.
75% off of it.
At $10 was they Steam do. Sale.
Yeah, they do all their sales through them.
Is the new one that has a newer engine that I really want to get into playing, but I just, well, money.
Yep, that's a thing.
Which, that's $30 right now for Killing Floor 2, but again, they work really well with
their community.
McCabe and the community, yeah.
These are
there's
some...
a lot of, if you're into old school gaming, you're not connecting to one of their servers. There are people across the United States, across the world, who have set up their own Killing Floor servers, and you're connecting to those.
Okay.
Yeah. These have custom maps, and you can make maps, you can do all kinds of stuff with it. It's a really good game.
These are some properly terrifying zombie things.
Yeah.
Good job. Okay. All right, so Killing Floor. Zombie survival first-person shooter. All right. Fred, what do you got?
I did a little bit of music, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, I've never really talked about music on the show when I've been on. I am a sucker for a cover. I don't know what it is. I like to hear other artists and what they do, with, you know, someone else's song, the inspiration that it provides them. And Disturbed in December of 2015 put out a cover of The Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel.
And it's incredible.
It's the best fucking thing I've ever heard with my ears. David Draiman kills this song. It is so good.
I will say I love Disturbed as a band, but they make one hell of a cover band.
Yeah, I mean, they really do, because they also, they covered...
10,000 Fists in the Air.
Yes.
That's theirs.
It was on the same album, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a Police song, is
the
it not?
It's a Genesis song.
Genesis song.
Land of Confusion.
Yes. Land of Confusion is fantastic. But this,
Did Shout by Tears for Fears.
Yes, which is very good.
Living After Midnight.
But yeah, I mean, his voice in this, it's amazing. He ramps it up where it needs to be ramped up, and he goes into that signature Disturbed kind of growl. But I mean, just everything that he does with this song, I literally drove to my apartment from Andy's house earlier to get my laptop for him to look at. I listened to it the entire way there and back. I can't stop listening to it. I don't know how I didn't pick it up in December. I just recently heard the song maybe a month ago, and I've been in love with it ever since.
His voice in that song is chocolate covered sex on silk. That's the best way to describe it.
Gross.
Gross, but accurate. I can. I'll give you both.
I didn't say anything about the accuracy of the statement. I just said gross.
But actually, it's their best-selling single.
That's the thing. I'm a straight man. I want that voice to make love to me.
just the voice?
Just the voice.
I want a disembodied voice to blow me.
That is a thing. That's a thing.
I think Frey can agree with
that phenomenon.
I mean, there's nothing not to like about everything that's coming out of his mouth right now. It's just one of those things that, especially because when you think Disturbed, and it may be one of those things, Andy and I actually listened earlier to Corey Taylor, the lead singer of Slipknot and Stone Sour. The night that Prince it was reported that he passed away. They were doing a show in Minneapolis, and for the fans there, he walked out with an acoustic guitar and did Purple Rain. And, you know, that's one of those voices that, like, you hear him in Slipknot, and then you hear him sing, and it's like, holy shit. Like, that's not what you sound like, but it is.
Another treat with Corey Taylor. There was a Dio tribute album, and he does a cover of Rainbow in the Dark that is to die for.
Like I said, if it's a cover, I'm probably on board because I love to hear what a band does with their inspiration from another band. You know, like the music that they listened to growing up and it inspired them to make music, and then they take that song and give it to other people with their twist on it. I love that.
Well, there's an entire Dio cover album in tribute to him. In fact, off of that specific album, Tenacious D actually won a Grammy for one of the covers on the album.
I mean, Tenacious D. Yeah.
We know that they love Dio. If you've ever seen the movie.
Yep.
Yeah. There's some good stuff out of Dio too. Well, this is I have shared this before and I will share it again. This is a fantastic song. It's a great video too. You know, very artistic, yeah. You know, not like nothing and, racy, nothing weird, you know, nothing that that you couldn't just, you know, just like, yes, this is the song.
This is exactly the thing that I didn't want.
This is it.
And that's another very telling thing about the song is that whenever you introduce it to someone or you're like, hey, I've been listening to this, literally every response is what I've gotten from you guys, where it's like, yes, you know, and that's, you're hitting the home run, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, well, I used to have, you know, the Simon and Garfunkel Greatest Hits mixtape.
Side note, you know? With The Sound of Silence, it's the song that both got Simon and Garfunkel a contract, broke them up, and then brought them back together.
Shocking. Not at all.
This was the first song they put out. They got their contract. They were a band. This song was not popular. It ended up breaking them up. It was then remixed, and someone else had done like a remix and done some stuff with it and started playing it. It gained massive popularity. Because it gained that popularity, Simon and Garfunkel got back together and put out a second CD, which was dubbed by the record producers as The Sounds of Silence, to try and capitalize off of that popularity. So this song literally made them a thing, broke them up, and made them a thing again.
It's so good. It's my karaoke song whenever I go.
And nice. Now Disturbed has perfected it.
I'm looking at the video and it's like,
I would not go that far. It is its own phenomenon.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't believe that you can improve upon the original.
Well, yeah, and I think you could probably take another group or another person could probably take this and do their twist on it, and I would love it just as much because, like Michael said, this song is amazing on its own.
No, the only song that I know of that...
I did not know that they covered Land of Confusion.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, we just talked about that.
I know, but I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
Now I see it.
Midnight, they covered...
Yeah, this is a good song, too. I mean,
I love this song, yeah. Just... Okay, carry on.
No, the thing I was going to say is the only song that I know of that the cover was accepted as the better version of the song was All Along the Watchtower.
Oh,
it was originally a Bob Dylan song.
And it was not good.
And then it was covered by Jimi Hendrix, and then later on Bob was interviewed and go, no, it was his, it's his song.
Yeah.
It's not mine.
Yeah,
I may have wrote it, but it's his song.
They actually met up at one point. I think it was actually Jimmy said to him, like, you know, thanks for making that song, everything else, and Bob actually looked at him and went, no, man, that's your song now. It's yours.
Yeah, it belongs to Hendrix.
Yeah.
I mean, and in that mindset, for myself only, I am always going to be more partial to Metallica's Turn the Page than Bob Seger's Turn the Page.
I agree.
Both of them are good, though. Both of them are real good.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's good.
Okay. A lot of times I find covers better.
I'm going to have to listen to the Land of Confusion one after the show. Okay. Because that's a thing that I have to do now. Okay, so, Daniel, what do you have here? Privateer Press?
I have Privateer Press, which are the makers of possibly my favorite RPG setting.
It's beautiful.
It is a well-contained fantasy world. It's fantasy steampunk. was originally a 3.0 module that then sprouted a company. And with that has a series, as you're cycling through War Machine and Hordes, are miniatures games based in that setting of the Iron Kingdoms that you can play. And they've been fairly smart in that the current iteration, which is Mark II of War Machine and Hordes and the Iron Kingdoms RPG, are all compatible. So you can build your own characters in the RPG and then use them in the miniatures game. They have board games now. Also, those are somewhat compatible. So you could make your character, put them in the board game or put them in the miniatures game, and it all plays pretty much the same. The reason why I bring this up is they just announced they're doing Mark III for the miniatures games for War Machine and Hordes. There's a big groundswell. They've entirely broken down the system. It's definitely, and it's about to be an excellent time to take a look at it. They're also doing for the miniatures game special unit boxes. So if you're one of those guys that liked 40K but just can't have essentially a heroin addiction in the amount of money that you have to spend for freaking miniatures,
yeah, it
you
is can go expensive.
Switch over to War Machine and Hordes and actually get some bang for your buck.
Yes, play War Machine. It's much cheaper. The basic, the smallest unit size, the skirmish size, which is actually what most people play, costs you like $20 to get a starter box. I think of all the minis that I've got, I spent maybe $100 total, and I've got an average size army.
Yeah,
and that's unheard of in Warhammer.
I mean, you can spend a lot of money in this game and get huge armies for really big battles, or you have a lot of options to switch out things. But for the most part, this is one of the beautiful things I love about War Machine. It's one of the reasons I'm getting into it, is because it's, okay, I like 40K. 40K was neat. I could spend a quarter of what I've spent on 40K and have a massive army, beautifully painted, beautifully detailed, and every piece has a purpose rather than generic, I'm here to absorb fire, man.
Yeah.
On gallery, you'll start seeing the pieces.
Also, the world that it lives in is a living, breathing world. As a writer, I have immense amount of respect for the product that they put out, and a great deal of respect in that they, a lot like BattleTech/MechWarrior, they're keeping a calendar. All time just keeps going forward. It keeps progressing. They're not hitting a restart button every single time with a new iteration, and they keep their history.
Yeah, they have a number of factions. So, again, like one of my favorite ones in there is Signar, which is kind of steampunk Britain, only they've gone past steam and are now using electricity. Like, they have knights with lances that actually fire lightning bolts, or what they call storm glaives, which are electrically crackling two-handed blades.
It's if Nikola Tesla ran an empire and made an army.
Yeah.
Sweet.
If British Empire had hired Nikola Tesla to go, hi, upgrade all of our shit.
Wow. But
it's a wonderful fantasy world, and also I will say this, it's one of the few fantasy worlds out there that has decent gender representation between both.
It really does.
Oh, okay, good.
This is something
like
that you can get your daughters into, and they'll be mostly fine. Just keep them away from cricks.
Okay, this is something else. Wow,
it's good times. If you want to start playing, Andy, I've got an army.
I don't know. I just don't know.
Well, trust me, man. As soon as I get money coming in, I'll fight you.
Wow.
I'll have to break out my troops. They're in my closet.
It's compared to a lot of our miniatures games, it's one of the more affordable ones. And again, as you're looking in the all-in-one army box, you get all those miniatures, plus you're getting all the rules. It's pretty much a one-stop shop, and you've got an army that'll last you a lifetime.
Yeah.
You can buy additional little pieces to add to it, but instead of going, I have this tiny thing and I can't even actually play this, you get the giant bulk thing.
Yeah.
I'm more of a fan of the RPG myself, And I will say, for RPG books, their prices are very reasonable.
Speaking of which, game on Sunday?
Yes, game on Sunday.
Yes.
But, no, it's a fantastic world. It feels wonderfully lived in. And I can't stress enough, if you're interested in
wait a second. The base has grass on it and gravel and...
Yeah, that's if you do it yourself. You can choose to do that. A lot of people do a lot of customizations to their models. You can paint them because that's a painted model. You can paint it however you want. You can customize the pose. You can customize what's on the model. It's, again, the amount of getting into actual modding capability on them is actually impressive.
And they support their community. Good heavens, yes.
Huh. I am, I'm impressed. You have impressed me.
I'm glad I've done something.
Congratulations. You have impressed me. You may live another day. Not like... Okay, anyway, that's funny. man, there's some... Okay, I'm going to get lost in this website if I don't, if I'm not careful here.
Don't stop now. You're going to get lost.
Friggin' Alistair.
Gun mages.
No, that's not a gun mage. That's Alistair.
Yeah, he was a gun mage warcaster.
Epic warcaster.
To make it quick, the idea of you have certain people who have magic who control basically their version of tanks, which are bipedal steam-powered...
Robots. Units, it's robots. All robots.
And the warcasters control them.
Huh. Okay, then. Man, this is some interesting stuff here.
So, you know, so go through this site, look at their stuff while listening to Disturbed covers. Problem solved.
Yes. Do the thing.
Are they live...
That'll be a nice mashup.
It looks like they're live streaming, or at least they do live stream...
They do live stream a number of events and promotions. They heavily support their community. They give you previews on a regular basis. This is a living, breathing community, and they just keep growing.
Also, there are a number of people online who do what are called battle reports, which they actually film the games and comment on them. And unlike certain people who have the, you know, fair use issue, Privateer Press doesn't care.
Yeah, no. They want you to go ahead, enjoy the game, promote the game, promote the community, and they're not angry about it.
Yes, cover matches. Talk all about it. Give us the free press.
Yeah, that's doing it right.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm actually going to look at getting into building my own terrain for both the RPG game that we play and also for doing miniatures, just because...
Yeah, for the audio listeners...
playing a war game in actual, like, looking terrain rather than just imagining it.
For the audio listeners, I stumbled into the hobby section of the website, and that ends up with full terrain galleries for the battles and amazing artistic talent, because you can get in there and you can paint your minis to do look however you choose them to be.
It's fantastic. And also there's a magazine. If you just want to take a gander and the site's not really for you, they have a magazine called No Quarter, which goes into all the different aspects of the stuff they offer, including art tutorials and building your own terrain. Guides that give you suggested things for how to paint your minis. There's an online subscription. They have PDFs available. It's an easy community to become a part of, and it's an easy community to just dip your toe in and see if you like it. I can't suggest it highly enough. It's a fantastic community, and by heavens, if you live on the West Coast, definitely do this. The support there is massive.
And they've got, of course, a nice Facebook page that you can, let's see.
And if you message them, they will get back to you, usually in 2 hours.
There's only 34,384 people that like their page. I mean, that's nothing for a community, right? That's a good community. That's a good-sized community. You can do a lot with it. So this is impressive. And definitely yet another hobby to sink a lot of money into. Yay! I probably won't be joining. I'm really serious. I probably won't be doing that.
Just take a little bit of money. No.
You guys have fun. You tell me about it later.
You can comment on it.
There we go. Yeah. It'll be great. It'll be fine.
Ringside commentator.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Okay. Michael, you've got one. Enchanted Insiders?
Yes. Last week, as you all know, I was not here. I was out doing an event which is some people in the in the Florida area have probably heard of, called Dapper Day. And all Dapper Day is really is just a bunch of people who wanted an excuse to dress up real fancy and go to Disney. Well, it has started to explode.
Okay.
And it's starting to really get some coverage from a lot of people. And I'm pretty sure Disney has like officially recognized that, yeah, this is a thing that's happening now and we welcome it and all that stuff. I was out with my lovely wife and her dear friend who have their own website, live stream podcast thing called Enchanted Insiders. And it's very much local to Orlando, so all of our Florida listeners will be very should be very interested, and anyone who's thinking of coming to Florida, especially if you're going to Disney,
I found your
because
face.
They cover all sorts of things in entertainment, about the parks, local food and entertainment, and you know they're on. You can find them on Facebook. You can find them on YouTube.
I found you.
They also talk about costuming and makeup and just all sorts of stuff that they're talking about, and they had me on there because I was hanging out with them doing the Dapper Day thing, and I of course mentioned us on there, and so I'm mentioning them here because they do a lot of great stuff if you're looking for something to do in the Orlando area and you want to have a good time.
Okay, I found your face on one of them.
Yeah, that's me. There I am.
So I had to zoom through. Show you looking all dapper and stuff. So yeah, there you are.
Yes.
Okay, so Enchanted Insiders. So
yes.
you can find it. They don't have a custom channel, but you can search.
They don't have a whole lot on YouTube yet. Their Facebook page is up and running. They do Instagram, Twitter, a couple of other platforms. YouTube is actually new for them. They just set that up. So,
well, I have subscribed, and you too. You should too. Gosh darn it. So let's see. Actually, I'll just copy out the link here, and I'll put it in the show notes.
Cool.
So that will, even though it's not the prettiest link, you can find it. Okay. So now I've got an interesting one that came through Steven, and it is concrete cloth. I know it sounds a little strange, right? A little strange.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like a just add water kind of thing, and suddenly you have a concrete shelter. Let me see if I can get the video up here, because I was trying to find the right thing for this media. What really astounded me was the way they built one of the shelters, because it comes as like a flat pack thing. Let me see if this is it. Concrete canvas shelters. Let's see. I think this is the one, if they actually do the building of it. Yeah, that's sort of it.
It's by two people in less than 2 hours, and is ready.
Okay, we'll back it up. Okay. Concrete canvas shelters
are an award-winning technology that has been described as buildings in a bag. A 54-square-meter variant can be deployed by two people in less than 2 hours, and is ready to use in under 24 hours. The core technology is a revolutionary new material called concrete cloth, a cement-impregnated fabric. Concrete canvas shelters are rapidly deployable hardened structures that are deployed in four simple steps. Step one is delivery. The shelter is delivered folded and sealed in an airtight sack. The sack is opened and the shelter pulled out using a vehicle. Step two is inflation. The shelter is inflated using an electric fan.
It's blowing up like a bounce house.
The base and is now ready for step three. Step three is hydration. Water is sprayed onto the shelter until the surface is saturated. The final step is setting. The concrete cloth cures in the shape of the inflated inner, and 24 hours later, the concrete canvas shelter is operational. The shelters can be covered in earth, sand, or snow, providing an excellent thermal performance and a force protection capability protecting against small arms fire and shell fragments.
Because that's important here in the States, of course.
The hard, fireproof shell provides a level of security not possible with soft skin structures, protecting stores, equipment, and personnel. Concrete cloth is a ceramic and will not burn. And the sealed plastic inner enables a sterile environment, vastly increasing frontline medical capability. Concrete canvas shelters. In less than a day, 54 square meters of hardened, sterilizable space that has the potential to last for over 10 years.
So, that's just like, what? Where has this been? But some of these videos came out in, they've been doing this since like 2008. So, they've been around a while. It is not the most inexpensive thing. Obviously, this is, you know, for like a military deployment kind of operation. You know, why didn't we see these in the Haiti disaster? You know, why weren't these deployed where they could just immediately have sterilized workrooms that, you know, weren't going to be a, you know, a shanty town? Now, this would have been perfect. Absolutely perfect. No reason that these things shouldn't be deployed all over the place. Except, of course, cost. Yeah, they're not exactly cheap. So, go check them out at New Innovations. Of course, there's also concretecanvas.co.uk. I think that still works, possibly. But you can follow the links in the show notes. And with that, as I see that people are dripping and drooping and falling all out. Oh, yeah, okay, go ahead and puff yourself up, Dan. That's fine. You can do that. It's okay. You know, it's no slight against your manhood. It's fine. No problem. But with that, unless you guys have anything else, I think we'll call it quits. What do you say? We're done?
We're done.
Well, we are currently living after midnight.
We're an audio show. You need to speak up.
I think we covered an enormous amount of material and are frickin' done.
We are done. Okay, let me see here. Oh, yeah, there it is. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for tonight. We'll be back about next Friday, about 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, the conversation should continue on the web. Head over to orillyradio.com, that's O-R-L-Y-R-A-D-I-O, for all the links right at the top of the page. And do watch us live and chat with us so that you can be part of the conversation. If you like what we've done here, you can help keep the lights on. Follow the Patreon link on the webpage. That'll take you over to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/Cowen, C-O-W-E-N. That would be me. And you can donate directly via the cleverly named donate button if you don't want to do a recurring thing through Patreon. But, you know, if that's too rich for you and you cannot contribute with monetary means, that's fine. I need some brain power, though. How about you contribute topic ideas, corrections, advertising offers, unclaimed lottery tickets, whatever you happen to have, including hate mail and unsolicited advice. Email those over to us at orillyradiopodcast@gmail.com and leave us a voicemail at 470-222-ORLY or 6759. We do have a subreddit, but I'm gonna shutter that. That's ridiculous. Just email us. That's what I need you to do. But really, truly, what I need you to do is I need you to share the show. I need you to like us on Facebook. I need you to follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, Google+, subscribe to the YouTube channel, follow us on the Twitch channel. Do all these things to spread the word about the show. You know, who knows? The NSA might be pounding down our doors just because we found out something that they did not want us to know. Maybe. Probably not. But you never know. We're going to tell you how it is as best as we possibly can. So we can't thank you enough for being part of the show tonight and giving us some of your valuable time. This has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Cowen Services Network. Music for the show is created by Kevin McLeod of Incomptech.com and, of course, Disturbed. Thanks, guys. Bye. And the broadcast has been successfully terminated.
It's in the can.
It is in the can. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go to bed.